You want to give it to the person who came up with the title? Give it to Shubra and she'll tell you the title and the thought behind it. The role of commitment on the path of bhakti. So what did she have in mind when she came up with that title? Go ahead, tell them.
I was specifically thinking from what are the things that
it's not on.
Prevents us from making an ongoing commitment to a relationship, and what are the things that strengthen us what are the things that helps us in keep making that ongoing commitment to a relationship? Okay?
Reasonably clear. You said it better when I was in the car. I'll say it back again. So after a little while, be ready for me to ask you to move forward again, because there's lots of space in the front, and I've been to the Harmony Collective for several years, and there's always people that they heard the prasadam is really good, and they come. Okay. Okay. So I'll start with say it again. The importance of, yes? The importance of commitment in the path of bhakti. Making advancement in the path of bhakti. And where the topic of relationship fits in to the topic of making progress on the path of bhakti, a phrase that I have thought about a lot and expressed from time to time is Krishna consciousness is all about relationships. And ultimately, the relationship is our relationship with Krishna. And other relationships that are Krishna conscious relationships, there's a connection with Krishna, a relationship with Krishna. And I'll do a little sharing, expanding on that point. In Hungarian, the Hungary devotees made a little presentation on what translates into English as the currency of relationships. Specifically, the word currency was chosen because currency has materialistic connotation. Like money is currency. And currency is used when there's some exchange between one person and another person where they want to buy something, they give some currency, whether it's dollars or euros or pounds or rupees, or in China it's RMBs. I don't even know what it stands for, but everybody says RMB. So, currency, money. So in a relationship, there's some exchange. But so what's the currency of relationships? It's affection, feeling for one and the other. So they're explaining to people that know nothing about bhakti, can we move forward a little bit more? Because there's already somebody that's looking for a perch to land on and they can't find one. Do You can move that tripod or sit in front of it or something. He's an intelligent young man. Okay. Thank you all very much. We're friendly here in Harmony Collective. What I'm doing right now is without there's really fantastic graphics that explain, that demonstrate all this, but I'm just giving you a little summary of something that I've done at colleges a number of times, the currency of relationships, and it's explaining Rupa Goswami's teachings on rasa. And the conclusion is, it's Krishna. But it's not just like keeping Krishna in a box and he comes out of the box and goes, ah, Krishna. It's a sequential, it leads to, relationships lead to relationship with Krishna. Genuine relationships, meaningful relationships lead to a relationship with Krishna. Just like the discussion with the youth group today. Self-love is incomplete, or it's notional only, minus love of Krishna. And when there's love of Krishna, then there can be love of others, including oneself. Minus Krishna, it's just notional only. It means it's Maya, in short. It's this perverted reflection of the real thing. The real thing requires connection with Krishna. And it's not just, you know, because we're Krishna bhaktas, we say that. It's the absolute truth. Everything comes from a source, and that source is Krishna. And so for there to be any relationship, there is, eternally existing, a relationship with the source of everything. Everything that exists has a source. Okay, fantastic. Very gentle. I've never seen a little boy be so gentle. That was really, compliment him later. It was very gentle. Gentlemanly. So back to currency of relationships. When people have a relationship, there's this language of subject and object. The object of, so there's in this graphic, there's a family looking over the edge of a crib into the little baby that's in the bottom of the crib. So the baby is the object of the affection. So the object, and then there's the subject. Or in Sanskrit, it's Vishaya and Ashraya. It's Rupa Goswami's science of rasa. So, in spiritual relationships, Krishna is the Vishaya. And we're the Ashraya, the abode of love and the object of love. That's reality, absolute reality. That's spiritual reality. And for us to have relationships with others, so there's these different kinds of relationships, servitorship, friendship in this world, people that aren't Krishna bhaktas, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, conjugal affection. So we have different relationships in those categories. But to make it real, a real relationship, you have to know the other person. We'll say it negatively. Supposing person A doesn't understand person B, and they have a relationship, and they call it friendship. Well, what's the relationship? It's dysfunctional, and it ends up where they have a relationship and it breaks because person A didn't understand person B, and person B didn't understand person A. They had their expectations of what the other person is supposed to be or what the other person's needs are and trying to fill the other person's needs where they don't understand. So it's a dysfunctional relationship at best. And generally it breaks after some time. So to have a relationship that's sustainable, then you need to know the other person and you need to know yourself. That's the spiritual conception platform, because that's who we really are and who the other person really is. Now there's a package. The self, who we really are, is within a body and a mind. A gross body and a subtle body. So the other myself, I'm not the mind. I have one. It's my mind and my body. And my body has needs and my mind has needs and emotions and but that's not me. So if I'm going to have some acceptance of who I am, I need to accept who I am in all these areas. But the deeper sense is who I really am. And who I really am is an animating and energizing the other parts of this holistic picture of who I am. But ultimately who I am is the spiritual spark. Because when the temporary thing is kaput, that spiritual spark remains. It's who I really am. And the whole of Vedas, we'll say, keep it smaller, the whole of Bhagavad Gita is self-realization, to learn who we really are. And that includes understanding who we're not. We may engage with who we're not, the mind and the body, and use that in some way to spiritualize it, the body and the mind and the intelligence and Krishna's service. But it's just utilizing something that's on the temporary nature to connect with the eternal. That's a spiritual conception of then a relationship with another person. You need to understand the other person's needs, interests, and concerns, and ultimately who they really are. The whole package of the other person. If I'm going to have a relationship, a meaningful relationship, I can't just impose my expectations upon other people. You should be like this. Isn't that realistic? That's not a relationship. You accept the other person for who they are, and you help them grow, from depending upon the nature of the relationship. But you can't help people grow unless you've grown. So it takes receiving before you can give. Then you can have a relationship. But ultimately, so that this presentation from Hungary that's now translated into English says it's incomplete without a missing piece of the puzzle. And a missing piece of the puzzle is who I am, the holistic picture of who I am and the other person is not just an entity floating on its own, that the entities are connected to the source. So a complete relationship is connected to the source of who I am and who they are, and that's our relationship. That's a complete relationship. So Krishna consciousness is all about relationships, circling back to. And the essence of all those relationships is our relationship with Krishna. And to connect with Krishna enhances and permits and qualifies us to connect with who others really are. The more we're clear in the first category, makes it more clear in the second category, including even the coverings. In the light of knowledge picture of the other person and myself, my mind, the good parts and the not so good parts. The conditioned stuff that comes and goes and rules for some time and then sits down and gets quiet and again rules up, stands up and becomes noisy again. It's part of the package. Not who we are, but it's part of the package. And so we have to know who we are and accept who we are and continue to grow. And know the other person. One of the little sayings that I got from Bhakti Tirtha Swami's residential quarters at the Institute House in Giranagari. A friend is one who knows who you are. They accept who you are and where you've been, and they gently encourage you to grow. There's more parts to it, but knowing, accepting, not judging, just encouraging the other person, a friend, to grow, to go whatever the next step is, the next doable step. Now that doesn't spell out, and their real identity is spirit soul, but that modality is part of how spiritual relationships and commitments to spiritual relationships are really wholesome and help one reach the goal. It's important to have devotee friends for spiritual growth. So now the thought behind this is the necessity for commitment to move on the path of bhakti. So the path of bhakti takes us to Krishna, that's a relationship with Krishna. And then our path to bhakti isn't solo. We're social beings, and one of our needs is to love and to be loved. It's a need. And some people have different ways of handling that, but it's a need. You can try to stab it to death, or you can go live in a cave, or you can, but you know, it's a need. We're social beings. So therefore, relationships to others, what are the obstacles to commitment to a relationship? And what are the enhancements to commitment to relationship? So in my discussion in the car on the way over here, you didn't cite it specifically, but on my office door in New York, for the longest time, there had this somebody in calligraphy write a saying that Goethe, a German, I guess, philosopher or fellow, wrote, who said, it's on commitment, and he says something to the effect that when opportunity arises, one of the options is to hesitate, and when there's hesitation, you don't see the option correctly. But as soon as there is an opportunity to do something that inspires you, when you make commitment, then providence starts to move. Providence meaning God. And doors and opportunities that you didn't even see start to appear and then open. Simply because of commitment. Now, it doesn't mean commit to any foolish thing. But once you know that something is worthy, it takes commitment. Let's speak about commitment to relationships. Commitment to relationships is necessary. Let's go to the ultimate. Commitment to our relationship with Krishna is necessary. The problem that we have, all the problems that we have, stem from one problem. We made a disconnect from Krishna. Krishna didn't disconnect with us. We turned our back and walked. Why would we do such a dumb thing? No good reason. But misuse of free will, and here we are. The Sanskrit phrase is yadrichchaya, which means there's no good reason. Somehow or other. Prabhupada translates it like that, and often says, somehow. Don't try to find the reason, because you won't find one. Misuse of free will. Why do you misuse free will? No good reason. It's really dumb. And we did it anyways. So here we are. Yadrich Chaya. So it can be in the positive sense also. Yadrich Chaya can mean somehow, there's directly in the Bhagavatam, when one somehow or another gets the good fortune of the association of a pure devotee. Well, what's the cause behind the causeless mercy of the pure devotee? There's no cause. It's the causeless mercy of a pure devotee. Don't try to find a cause. It's causeless. He's just merciful. And you happen to be in the right place at the right time, and kaboom. And you said yes. You bumped into one another and you said yes. Wow. Mercy. Krishna's mercy. Causeless mercy. So Yadrich Jaya can work both ways. Here we are. And we abandoned our relationship with Krishna and struggled and struggled and struggled for who knows how many lifetimes. And at some point, Yadrich Jaya happened and we met somebody gave us a book. Or we heard kirtan or something, some association of devotees in some form or another. And I never heard Dravida's story before. Dravida was visiting us. Dravida? You Harmony Collective Prabhus? You know who Dravida is?
I know, but he hasn't been here.
You know him, who he is. You know who he is, but you haven't.
I met him in Chicago.
Okay. Dravida Prabhu is a wonderful brahmachari. He's in his late 60s. He's a senior citizen brahmachari in the Hare Krishna movement. And he told his story of how he came to Krishna consciousness, which was fascinating. His father was a Marxist. And every day, that was their scripture. They read, you know, Marx's Communist Manifesto. He got, like, you know, trained up in communism. And, you know, and God is the opiate of the people. Like, stay away from God. And, you know, he bought it. It was in his system. He took little doses of poison and he became, you know, poisoned. That's how he saw the world. Then some things happened and, you know, became an anti-war person. And then he said, then Nixon was elected president. And I thought, it's over. You know, the war is going to keep going on, and he became crushed. The hopes of Marxism prevailing got crushed because Nixon became the president. Then he got lost and went to college and took yoga classes at Amala Bhakta, now Swami's yoga ashram in Manhattan. Krishna. Yadrich Chaya. And then somewhere along the way he heard the mantra, just yoga, hadn't read Prabhupada's books or anything, became attracted to meditation, yoga, and then mantra meditation, and just on his own was chanting Hare Krishna mantra, not from Hare Krishna devotees, just chanting Hare Krishna. And then he got a book, and we went, wow, it's really good. So he started reading more books, and slowly, his heart softened. Then he came to visit the temple and he heard Prabhupada is coming in 2 weeks, and so he stuck around and became a devotee. Bhatta Hari's story is fantastic too. You've heard it? Oh, it's really fantastic. So, Yadrich Chaya. By association, so that then it brings Krishna in the center. Now, today, Dravid is just this cornucopia of nectar. He just flows and flows and flows, and he recites and sings and poeticizes and dances, and he's such a happy person. Such a knowledgeable person. Such a deep person. And he doesn't end. It's a stream that doesn't stop flowing. And he is one of the chief editors of Prabhupada's books. That's his service. He edits every year we read Vyasa Puja. He edits every single article. He edits for the World Sankirtan Minister Vijaya. He edits everything that goes into that newsletter, the Sankirtan newsletter that he sends out. He's just like, he's an editor. He's a word crafter. But he's not like a nerd, he's a bhakta. He's just so juicy. But, you know, before he was a Marxist, and God is the opiate of the people. So it's inside, it just needs to be brought out through association. And so now back to commitment. The commitment to the path of bhakti is the commitment to our relationship with Krishna. And we have commitments and relationships with others. It's fully dependent upon our commitment to our relationship with Krishna. Because without commitment to a relationship with Krishna, we're not going to have a spiritual conception of who we are, or of relationships, or of who the other person is. We'll have, you know, a quasi, at best, conception, or a dysfunctional relationship. So how to have a functional relationship? We'll understand the other person in this holistic picture of who they are, resting upon who they really are, aside from the present covering, because the present covering will change. Not may. It is changing, and it will continue to change, and those changes we have to accept. But then there's the deeper picture of the person. That's the unchanging self. The obstacles that we have in commitment to relationships is our own contamination. It's not over there, it's over here. The over here part is, I have expectations in relationships. And the relationship is resting upon those expectations. And if the expectations shift, either from my side or their side, and my expectations aren't met, I don't know if I'm committed to this relationship anymore, because I was expecting, and now it's not meeting my expectations. I'm not accepting the other person. I have my expectations. I'm projecting my expectations on that other person. It's our own stuff that's the obstacle. So how do you have a relationship where you don't have any expectations? That sounds weird. We expect to love and be loved, right? I mean, that's a need. It's a fundamental need. But then what's love? Well, you know, you satisfy my need, that then we love one another. And I'm not even really sure what my needs are, but I know you have to meet my needs. And you're not sure what my needs are, but I'm sure that you have to meet my needs. And that's love in this world. It's not love. It's something else. That's the obstacle to commitment to relationships. It's the impurities within ourselves. Now supposing, just close your eyes and imagine you didn't have any impurities. I'm trying. Or at least you want to get to the place where you don't have impurities. That's a lot easier to imagine. And I want to be committed to relationships. So the obstacle of expectations and my own of my own stuff being met without acknowledging, you know, the other person is who they are, without accepting the needs and the other person and the package that they're in as well as the soul. So it requires commitment on the soul platform. And then in Prabhupada's words, I like very much, Krishna consciousness is love and trust, give and take. You've heard that one before? Anyone that's heard me speak has heard it before. Love and trust, give and take. That's what Krishna consciousness is resting. It's relationship. In a relationship. So operative is to be trustworthy. Small thing, right? And then when somebody is trustworthy, you place your trust. And until they're trustworthy, you may be a little guarded about your trust. And when there's trust, then there's love. And when there's love and trust, it can go this way or it can go that way. And no one's keeping score. Like in a community, you know, the Harmony Collective. You have different people from different backgrounds and you're gathering together and, you know, your personalities are different and the stuff that you're carrying inside is different and sometimes. It's any relationship, a group or an individual with another individual. When there's commitment, you know, you have some discussion, and then some consensus is reached, and I yield. You know, sometimes it can go this way; it doesn't have to be my way. Sometimes it can be other than my way, and that's just fine. Because I'm committed. Because to me, the relationship is more important than which direction things go in. That's a rule that I try to live my life by. Relationship trumps everything. Because Krishna consciousness is all about relationships. And relationships are based on pleasing Krishna. Because somebody in this room made a nice little design. Krishna's pleasure is everything. You're going to see it in the presentation tomorrow at Farmington Hills if you come. Krishna's pleasure is everything. Because relationship trumps everything, and Krishna's pleasure is the relationship that trumps everything. So if I yield to something, even if I'm not so comfortable with it, I may yield to it because if my appreciation is Krishna will be pleased by this. Whether it's in a family or a community or with a friend or something. Krishna should be pleased. Some people, they're really attached, I gotta be right. Anyway, they're different personality types, and that's a whole other topic. But commitment to Krishna is to be pleased, that trumps everything, and that takes care of obstacles in commitments to relationship, because if you're committed to a relationship, you're not judging the other person. I'll give one example that's coming to mind. Somebody was way up here, and they were fantastic. And something, you know, years, fantastic service, ideal standard, da 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 da. And then something happened and took a nosedive. And they went, you know, to depths that you don't want to even, as a devotee, hear about. And they were feeling, people are going to judge me. But I don't care. And when they didn't get judged in their relationship with me, they were like, huh? And I said, I know that's not you. I know you. I don't know where that thing is coming from, but it's not you. And so I don't have to like the behavior, but I'm not judging you at all. You're a wonderful person. I know you. Are you sure? I'm sure. And so it went on for like a year and a half, 2 years of, I was sure. No judgment. No, like, you know. And then time moved the material energy, and then the devotee started to come back to, you know, a more stable, more representative of who they really are kind of a position. To this day, I don't know what that thing was, but what caused that. I don't need to know either. Now, they're dealing with the consequences of the decisions that they made during that period of time. That's their responsibility, not mine. I care, but it's not my responsibility. My responsibility is to help this person, according to whatever position they're in, grow, whatever the next support where they are and grow to the next step, whatever that is. It's doable for them because I'm committed to them, the spirit soul. And they believe it because they've seen it. They saw, you know, when they were up here and when they were down there, now where they are. They're not where they are is not where they were or where they were when they were down. How's that possible? Well, you see the soul, and the soul's connection with Krishna. And Krishna is to be pleased. And when they were down, it wasn't Krishna was pleased. But it wouldn't it all have helped that person if they felt, or what to speak of, heard, you're being judged. It's all about your behaviors, and your behaviors are unacceptable. And so, you know, trash on you. No. Behavior, it was very clear. I'm not speaking about the behaviors, but I don't mind saying, I'm not delighted about the behaviors at all. I just know that's not you. So no conversation about it. What can I do to help you? And the sooner you can come to acknowledging who you really are, that's great. Until then, how can I help you? So commitment is something that, in Goethe's word, I don't know what the word in German was, but providence is the English translation that I've been given. Providence sees the commitment and matter moves. Options that weren't there, at least you didn't see that they were there, then doors open. Here's a nice example. Because I believe you're at Harmony Collective, you've been engaged in book distribution marathon, yes? A little bit? More than a little bit?
Some.
So, did you have some Harmony Collective goal for the marathon?
Nothing this year.
Nothing this year. Okay. Let me speak a little bit about commitments to goals. This is, now I could put on my Vaisheshika Prabhu hat. Or his representative hat. Goals are powerful, and it's true. As soon as you set a goal and you mean it, something happens. One of the things that happens is the intelligence starts to become activated. Options that you didn't have any hint of an idea about suddenly appear. Because you made a goal. You're committed to the goal. A doable one. But a little stretch. And then intelligence starts to move. How to reach the goal. So supposing I have a goal, I want to be committed in my relationships. At least a handful, for starters. At least a few. I want to get beyond this unsteadiness. And right, so who are trustworthy persons? And I want to make a commitment in this relationship, that relationship, and the other relationship. I want to. This is, you know, New Year's resolution. I'm going to make a commitment in these 3-5 relationships. So, there are already some, but a more deep commitment to this relationship, these handful of relationships. When you mean it, then the intelligence starts to function. And you can see beyond the obstacles and the temporary and your expectations that aren't met and all that stuff. You start thinking more deeply on the meaningfulness. Now, certainly a possibility is to become attached to the outcome should look like this, instead of really a commitment to the relationship, because it might not look like this, it might look like that. Because don't project your expectations what the relationship should look like. Because then it's the same problem over again. You're projecting your expectations and the other person is not satisfying your expectations. And it puts a strain in the relationship. Just be committed in principle to the relationship, even if it goes down. Or if it goes up or stays the same. You just stay committed to the relationship. And it moves the heart. Moves our own heart, and then it becomes more of a heart-to-heart or a soul-to-soul and Krishna's pleased kind of a commitment. And it says to wrap up is, and it's all about our relationship with Krishna. Nila Smarna here? Downstairs? Down? He had to leave? You don't know. He's somewhere. So, in the youth group today, I said I would send to him, and I did. So, if you want a copy, you can get, just ask him, and I'm sure he'll forward it to if you ask him. This is the final thing here. There's, holding up my hand, this is a piece of paper. On the wall of one of Mother Teresa's places in Calcutta was a little sign, so I had somebody make it into a little image, graphic image, where she's making this statement about being who you want to be. And the conclusion is, in the final analysis, it's not between you and them, it's between you and God anyways. So, if you do some good activity, people may consider you to be calculating, do good for other people anyways. If you create something wonderful, in one day that something wonderful can be destroyed by someone else, create something wonderful anyways. Then a whole series of those. If you're very generous, people may think you're calculating, you want something from them. Be generous anyway. You know, a whole series of those things. You know, be what your values are. And In the final analysis, if there's some disagreement with another person, it's not in the final analysis, it's not between you and them, it's between you and God anyways. Because doing all the things that you feel you should be, do it for the pleasure of Krishna. Be committed to relationships, not because you want something from that relationship or you want to feel good about yourself. The bhakti path says, do for the pleasure of Krishna. And then that's how to be committed to relationships, because it's pleasing to Krishna. And in the final analysis, that's everything. You can please Krishna, you've got it. You're not committed to pleasing Krishna, and you're struggling endlessly. Mama Maya Duratya, yeah. Mama Via Prapajante, Maya Metam, you can easily cross beyond it. Commitment to relationship with Krishna, commitment to the path of bhakti, because it's going to take you there. It's going to take you to love for Krishna. If done properly, it may take a while, because we've got a lot of stuff to deal with. But it'll take you there, guided by the teachings of our founder, Chari, and the disciplic succession representing Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. Any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj.
These are engineers. They know how to turn a microphone on.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you very much. You touched upon Krishna being the Vishaya and the soul being the Ashaya. Did I get it right?
Krishna is the object or Vishaya, and one who loves Krishna is the Ashraya, the abode of love, the object of love and the abode of love. Vishaya, Ashraya.
Usually the word Ashraya is considered as shelter, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. So with the shelter of love, and the object of love is Krishna. A word has its meaning according to the context or its usage. Krishna is the shelter of all shelters. That's another Sanskrit phrase. Okay? Okay. Yeah.
There's a question.
It's the Harmony Collective program here. Yes. Speak into the mic, that's what it's for.
This decision that's been approaching my life for I don't know how long now, and I need to know whether I should try to satisfy my parents by going to college, or satisfy Krishna by going to college, or if I should just drop all that and just go to him.
Well, maybe it's a false dilemma. Maybe going to him could be any one of the above. What does Krishna want? What is somebody that's not living your autobiography? Is he crying or laughing?
It's a dilemma. It's a
dilemma. I hit his button. Boy. Okay. So, somebody, tell a little anecdotal thing about somebody you don't know, and then we'll come back to you. Somebody you don't know is being homeschooled, and they love it. And the goddess of fortune of homeschooling, her name is Arudha Mataji. You've heard her name before? That's okay. She has two sons who she homeschooled, and when they were 14 or 15, they got full scholarships at Oxford University, and they're now professors. They're like luminaries. But it wasn't just, you know, the genes of her family. She's helped a number of families in supporting homeschooling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She's great. So there's this family currently where there's a teenager who has been homeschooled, and one of the family members is in anxiety. They're just, you know, chanting 64 rounds that they can cite three cantos of the Bhagavatam, but you have to be ready for a career in their adult life. So that, you know, there's no academics of the worldly sense in their homeschooling program. I don't even know if it's lawful that you have to pass a GRE, graduate equivalency exam, or whatever it is. But, you know, this young person is qualified. They can pass a GRE in their sleep. They're really good. So I said, let's consult Arudha. And Arudha said, I was surprised. I had no idea what she was going to say. But she said, in my opinion, adult life in America requires, and this is a girl, someday going to be father. She's not likely she's going to be a father. Who knows these days? But anyway, but, you know, adult life in America today really requires a college education, and so here's a suggestion to sprinkle in some academics and prepare this young girl so she can have a college degree. And maybe she can finish her college degree in, you know, a fraction of the time that college degrees normally take, and here's a way to do it. But having a college degree is helpful. Now that's Arudha speaking. She's the advocate of homeschooling, saying what she said. Now there's other people that will say, you know, garbage, you don't have to have a college education. Jayadwaita Swami doesn't have a college education. He didn't even finish high school. Hey, Mom, Dad. Satyaraj, you know his name? Satyaraj? The rest of you know. Satyaraj.
I think he
doesn't know. Okay. Satyaraj didn't complete high school education. And a few years ago, he was commissioned to write a high school textbook on Hinduism. He doesn't have a high school education. But he's very committed to writing. He's one of the most prolific writers, left, right, and sideways. In his sleep, he writes. What to speak of when he's awake. Like Dravida quoting slokas. He's just like, imagine in Rudravita's dreams he's quoting slokas, playing his tambura and singing slokas. Lovely devotee. So, some persons would say not necessary. But, you know, what does Krishna want? And you know, look beyond your immediate situation, and what's that going to look like? Well, you don't know because you're young. How old are you?
20.
So imagine you're 30. And is it going to be important when you're 30 that you have had a college education? Not necessarily that you got a little paper that says I got a college education, but the discipline that goes with having a college education. And the refining of intellectual skills. That I don't remember what I studied in organic chemistry. Forget it. But there are some skills that I developed from taking organic chemistry that I'm using in my Krishna conscious life today. I was taking organic chemistry because I had a career plan that didn't happen. I had a different career. I didn't envision taking organic chemistry and becoming a Hare Krishna devotee for 48 years. I had no picture like that. But often it goes the other way. You know, you're this young, enthusiastic young man, and at some point in time, maybe I should get married, and what am I going to do to support myself and a family life? So, you know, you can do without it or do with it. Depends. Huh? Okay, well, it's easy to say that, and it's another thing to do that. Especially when you have responsibilities for another person in your life. No, I know devotees in Krishna-conscious marriages that, you know, there's nice examples, but they're really Krishna-conscious people. So, what does Krishna want? That's not an easy question to answer, but he asked the question, you're more likely to get an answer to what I should do this coming year than if you don't ask the question. What does my life look like beyond 20? You usually have a question. You got a question?
I have a lot of questions.
Can you narrow it down to your favorite one?
I can narrow it down to a category of questions.
Okay.
You were speaking about relationships and commitment and goals.
Yeah.
And Krishna being the source of love. And
source of everything.
The source of everything, but I'm thinking in terms of love.
Okay.
Because you were talking about love. And, I mean, a lot of people know me here. I've been a pretty fanatic Hare Krishna for several years. And that means, you know, quitting my job. I'm not sure my guru was so pleased with that. But I did that. And I joined a temple and these things. And I've been, you know, as authentically committed to relationships as I could be from who I was and where I was. And I'm wondering how authentic, because Krishna is a source of love, and people who are not practicing Krishna consciousness or are aware of their relationship with Krishna, though love is covered by kama,
yeah.
I'm wondering how authentic one can be in those relationships by virtue of their relationship with Krishna, and how authentic those relationships can be. And
you thinking of mom and dad, for example?
Mom and dad, and just the whole world.
Okay, not like, specifically a Christian.
No, and just people in general who have the same desires for love that we have.
But
they don't know Krishna.
Yeah.
nonetheless, in their heart, they're
feeling something.
Yeah.
And they're calling it love.
Yeah.
And they're committed. And they're committed to those relationships for a long time.
Yeah.
Till death do us part.
Yeah, some of them.
Some of them. I see them regularly in the airport, you know, that these hobbling along couple. We've been married for 56 years. We love one another. They hold hands, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then out comes the wheelchair, and off they go, you know. You can't hold hands in the wheelchair. But yeah, anyway. So, how authentic is that feeling of love that they have for one another? That's your question?
Yeah, how authentic is it, and how authentic can it be if at least one person in that relationship is Krishna conscious, whether it's a family member or a professional relationship or something like that?
Well, first of all, your word is authentic, but now you see it, now you don't. Asat. Temporary. Fundamentally temporary. And therefore, asat. So, it has a beginning, and a middle, and an end. So, something depends on what your definition of authentic is, but a definition of authentic is sat. It doesn't have a beginning and an end. It's eternal. That's sat. It is of substance. You read carefully in the first verse or two, purport or two of the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada speaks of this language, this Latin terms and Sanskrit terms, but the English are substance and category. Sat and asat. So here's a chair. How authentic is this chair? Feels pretty authentic to me.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in it.
Yeah.
But there's a time when it wasn't a chair, and wait a while, it's going to be something else besides a chair. How authentic is it? In an absolute sense, it's not. It's earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's what it is. In different combination, and wait a while, it's another combination. So, it's authentic in one sense, but in an absolute sense, not. Because it's asat. So, those relationships and the feelings of love are similarly temporary. The object is gone. And the feeling may intensify due to attachment, and then it's gone. It may stick in the mind, even for another lifetime or some period of time. But even the material mind is asat. So it's not authentic in the absolute sense. So we're accepting asat as sat, or authentic. What do you mean? I love my wife, or I love my dog, or I love my friend, or I love my professional colleague. They're etc. It's authentic. It's a feeling. And feelings, we know, they're like the wind. It comes and it goes. Feelings come and they go. So is there such a thing as a feeling that doesn't come and go? Feeling of attachment to the eternal. Now there's variegatedness in that realm of attachment to the eternal, but attachment to the eternal is the substantive authenticity. So, does that answer your question?
I have more questions.
Oh. One more.
I can pass the mic, though.
You can do one more and we'll give it to them. Whoever's the next person will take another question or two and then we'll end.
You talked about being committed to relationships without expectations.
Yeah.
I think of others and also even of ourselves in the relationship.
Yeah. Easier said than done.
Yeah. Especially, I think, especially also in terms of mutual goals, there's also accountability in the relationship. So
yes.
We have accountability, but not expectations.
Well, that's the issue. The way that I like to phrase it, a little different language, is be trustworthy. When you make a commitment to somebody, a trustworthy person fulfills the commitment simply because they said it, just like Ram. It's one of the key things. My father gave his word, that's it. What higher thing can there, what greater satisfaction can there be for me than my father gave his word and I'm upholding the word of my father? I mean, that's a high virtue, but that's a virtue of sat, truthfulness. Sat in that sense, upholding, abiding by the truth. So, be trustworthy. And then if for some reason that you didn't anticipate when you made that commitment because you're a trustworthy person, you go back to the person and say, I'm finding difficulty meeting that. I can't be there at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Or I can't have this thing completed by such and such time. And I'd like a little more time. Is that okay? You know, a reasonable person, because you're trustworthy, they say, well, these things happen fine. But, you know, thank you for letting me know you're not going to be on time. And that later time is just fine. And then the commitment is to being trustworthy and then perform accordingly. And then that endears trust because you're trustworthy. Things change. I've noticed. And so, but the commitment doesn't change. Commitment to the person and the relationship. I don't know if I'm addressing your question.
Yes, that was very clear.
Okay.
My question may not have been very clear.
Okay. Okay, one or two more. Okay.
In the last retreat, Guru Maharaj, in our Sangha discussions, very nice questions were given to us for discussing among each other.
Yeah.
So one of the questions was, is it possible to have deep relationships if the value systems are different? And, I mean, we discussed it, but it was not enough that we could discuss in more detail and we couldn't reach any conclusion, but it had been my contemplation. And I was thinking that, you know, to have really, first of all, what is the meaning of deep relationships? So we were discussing where we can put our trust, where we can share our deepest probably secrets and just to trust that relationship. But then I was thinking that it is important to have similar value system probably, because otherwise how that trust or relationship will build. In sometimes it happens that when other person is probably not up to that my value system, then I just end up feeling that, okay, no problem, I'm tolerating this for Krishna to please him, but I have a better value system. So it goes in that realm of something else, that maybe pride or something. So I never feel satisfaction in that relationship that I am being properly committed here. So can you throw some light on this?
Well, as you said, this is it takes a long time to get into this topic. It's not easy the question you're raising requires lengthy discussion. But here, a couple of short points. You know what a Venn diagram is? Okay, so here's and here's, and there's some overlap. This value system, that value system. Minimally, some values must be shared. That can be different values, and there's still a wholesome relationship. Because I know that other person's values, and my values are over here, but it's just fine. These are ones that we share, and we're consistent. and we're consistent with our values. The question last night, you weren't with us last night. No. Someone in the audience was a sociology, either student or professor or something. And in sociology, there's this thing where people hold, they didn't use the word values, they didn't use convictions, they use consciousness. And then their behaviors are over there. So they're not consistent with their own values. Now, an occasional, a value that I may hold, or you may hold, or someone may hold, is an occasional conduct different from someone's values. That's human. But if there's consistent, their values over here and their behavior is over there, this person needs a little help connecting. So I don't have to like judge them or dismiss them, but I may place less emphasis on that relationship, at least in terms of, you know, the closeness that I get to this person, because they're you know, quite unpredictable, or they're predictably unpredictable. They could go any direction because there's some disconnect. So it's a big topic, but some overlapping of values and some acceptance of different values in any relationship, in a family or amongst friends or in a community or whatever the circle is. Commonly, I would say, there's not a one-to-one match in values. Our personalities are different. It doesn't have to be identical match. It would be very rare if it was. Some overlap. Another? Are we done?
This is on the topic of commitments.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand the place where there's a commitment to a relationship and kind of boiling it down to the level of the nitty-gritties of what I want to do in terms of concrete ideas. And
concrete ideas means goals?
Yeah, concrete goals. And like you were mentioning... In the relationship. And like you were mentioning, sometimes we get stuck in those places of concrete goals and execution of those concrete goals. From our side. Because of whatever.
Because of whatever.
Reason. So I'm trying to understand how to still come back to those concrete goals.
That's easy. Doing it is another thing, but it's easy. Just hit the reset button. In Krishna consciousness, it's really good to hit, by circumstance or by choice, hit the reset button. Like, go way back to, why am I a devotee? Not like with a tone, but why am I a devotee? What's my goal? Why am I doing this? Now, when I started, my idea of why I'm doing this was quite different than today. My idea was, it makes sense to me, let me check it out. I just dive in a little bit, swim around a little bit, see what it's like. I don't know, but it makes sense, so I'm going to want to explore it some more. If you know something that's better, let me know. But right now I'm doing this because I want to explore it. Anyway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The refining of our sense of goal is good. It can be painful. We can feel like, whoa. But it's good. Because our immature can become more mature by refinement of clarity what the goal is. Let's just say, you know, what was the goal? Krishna prema. What do we know about Krishna prema? But that's the goal. So, I think I need some intermediate goals, Prabhu. So, even those intermediate goals, what, you know, do a refresh on those. And then some evaluation, how am I doing? And if you don't do that, you're not likely to reach your goal. Like a really simple metaphor. You get in a boat, you're going from, you know, America to London. And you're off by 1 degree. You're not going to end up in London. You may end up somewhere, but it ain't going to be London. So you got to do some recalibration as you're going along, as you're on the path. Are you sure you want to go to London? Are you sure you're on the path that's going to get you to London? So do some recalibration regularly, what the goal is and how you're doing. And you'll find obstacles. I really didn't know that I was heading west when I was meant to be heading east. Anyway. All right. Last one. No more after this one. We're going to end.
Thank you, Maharaj.
All right, Krista.
I discovered a dilemma.
You did?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
That the more clear and concrete the goals that I'm able to envision for myself, the more clear and concrete they are or occur to me, the more kind of material they also seem to be.
Uh-oh.
Whereas Krishna conscious goals and advanced devotees who I associate with who have like really lofty Krishna conscious goals, and they're empowered to do them, but it just looks like a constant miracle from my perspective. And so for myself, for me to have a clear goal, it seems like maybe I'm limiting myself or...
Does Krishna have form and his form limits him so he can't have form?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Some people say God can't have form because as soon as he has form, you're limiting him and God's unlimited, so God can't have form. He's formless because form is limiting. So similarly, not identically, if I have a goal, it's limiting me. It's material or materialistic. Materialistic means sense gratification. That's materialistic. And leaving behind materialistic life doesn't mean, fantastic, now you don't have a goal. Because as soon as I have a goal, it's materialistic. No. The goal doesn't have to be lofty. It doesn't have to be something beyond my binoculars' reach. It can be, you know, I want to be respectful. There's a goal. Or that's just a quality. But, you know, I want to be humble. Oh, let me pick another one. But that's, you know, that's fundamental for reaching the goal. We're going to hear tomorrow. I want to be able to connect with the name as a person. The name Krishna. Is that materialistic? Is it limiting? Is it a goal?
Yes.
Okay. You don't like that one?
Love that goal.
But...
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's a goal you can set for me and yours.
No. Don't do that one. Your goal. Don't do that one to me. You have your goals. If you don't have your goals, that's your choice. But if you have goals, it helps you to make steps to get there. That's a very core teaching that I understand from our founder Acharya. When you have a clear sense of goal, it's very easy to take steps to get there. Conversely, you don't have a clear sense of goal, very difficult to get there. And goal doesn't mean limiting. Goal means goal. And you can rewire the goal or recalibrate the goal or retake, the steps that you take. There's lots of diversity permitted. There's boundaries, but there's lots of diversity permitted by Krishna for our own individuality. But the goal, you identify something that moves your being and strive towards that. And continue. There are persons in this assembly who have had the same goal for 8 years, and they're continuing to strive to cultivate reaching that goal. That's powerful. And you know what? They're getting closer because of having the goal and committed to the goal. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.